All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Liberty Lands. I'm your host, Big John, and joining me today, as usual, my friend and co-host in this endeavor, Mr. Mike Termott. Mike, how are you today?
Super, super. Thanks, John, and thanks for hosting this conversation. I think we should jump right in. It's news that's breaking by the minute at this point this morning. It's
crazy. Our text exchanges doing prep for the show must have changed 100 times between, say, Monday and today, Mike. News breaking fast here. So you're right. Let's get right into it. What's in the zeitgeist right now, of course, is the issue with Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor in chief of The Atlantic, being, accidentally included in what was supposed to be a secure Signal chat with the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of DNI, the DNI Director, et cetera, involving strikes against the Houthis. So let's start off at the beginning there, Mike. To your knowledge, what is Signal? And we need to start at the beginning, right?
Sure, let's start at the beginning. Signal is a commercially available app that a lot of Americans use. I think most Americans are aware of it. The reason so many people use it, it's not used anywhere near as much as, you know, text messenger and things like that, right? But the reason so many people do use Signal is twofold. One is ironic. First of all, it's because it is end-to-end encrypted. And so people that are afraid of other people listening in, whether the government or anybody else, and of course the federal government has plenty of resources to break through that if necessary, but people who want to make sure no one is listening in, they'll use Signal. The other reason people use Signal that I mentioned is somewhat ironic is that it is very easy to add and subtract people from your chat group. Much easier than in text messenger, where you typically have to start all over again and recreate your chat if you're trying to exclude someone or even include someone. And so there are a lot of, in our campaign, we use Signal sometimes for that reason. Right. And I remember making fun of our team who brought this to my attention initially, suggesting the Russians really aren't listening into our campaign discussion. I wouldn't worry about it, but it was explained to me. It's just a lot easier to add and subtract people for various purposes.
Right. So its features are it's secure and it's easy to manage membership or easier. So and for
it
people
is
who
secure.
Right.
And
secure.
It is easier to manage. And the reason I say easier is because one of the things that I think we should mention up front is that making it easy to add and subtract people doesn't necessarily mean it is therefore easier to control and easier to maintain security. Because the way it looks at the moment, and we don't know with 100% certainty, but 98% certainty, the way it looks at the moment is that someone, we believe Mike Waltz, accidentally added the journalist. And in Signal, it's so easy to do. You could just easily, John, your thumbs are big. You get the idea. It would not be hard to hit the wrong name. And if you weren't paying enough attention.
Right, right. And I think before we continue into the implications of all this, just throwing in a little personal anecdote. When I worked on Wall Street, in IT, one of my tasks was to build one of the first online banking platforms. That was, for a major, one of the top three U.S. banks. And no matter, at the end of the day, I'll never forget this, after we had built it and we had brought in DoD-grade servers and firewalls and proxies and all this great stuff where you don't go to sleep for 3 days running, 72 hours without sleep, blah, 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 but to get it installed, I remember the CEO of the bank walked up to me and he said, "All right, John," he goes, "Now, how do I prevent someone like you from going into the server room and stealing all the necessary information you need to rob this bank blind?" And it just brought home the immediate, the clarity of it was immediate, right? Like, you've built a sophisticated system. All it takes is an idiot like me to swipe his key card, go into that server room, and I've stolen everything. So the fact that
secure doesn't always mean easy. Those
correct.
Two things can be at odds.
Right. So in this case with Signal, true, once you're in that group, you can be rest assured pretty much that the communications end-to-end are encrypted. People aren't snooping on that. But that doesn't take care of who's actually at either end of that conversation, who was let in, right? It's like Dracula. You have to be invited in for him to do stuff to you, right? So it's like the same thing with the Signal chat. They invited someone in. I think we should make up front. This editor, was it Jeffrey Goldberg?
Yep.
I don't think he did anything wrong or illegal or even immoral, right? He was invited to a group chat. He joined, correct?
And you don't have to do much. I think all you have to do is hit the accept button. It's not like you have to enter a secret code, right? And Signal,
right.
Someone invites you in, you say, okay. And if you don't know what it's about, apparently his phone has Walz's name. It says you've been invited into this chat group by Mike Walz. Well, this brings up an important point that not too many people are talking about right now.
Right.
Which is that these two guys knew each other, and Walz is claiming that that's not the case. Well, not only is it the case that Walz was in Goldberg's phone, but Goldberg was in Walz's phone.
Right. Right.
The only way you can invite someone into Signal is if you've got their phone number, and the only way that that shows up ex post as Mike Walz has invited you into the Signal is if he's in your phone.
Right.
So
right.
These guys knew each other. You know, Goldberg has said, I'm not talking about that, which is a problem, and Walz is denying it, which I predict is going to be a problem.
Right, right. So there's so many layers to this. You know, it's almost like a Guy Ritchie movie. There's so many layers to this. So so we've kind of said, okay, this is what Signal is as a technology, right? Now, it's also important to say is this is not an approved government vendor, correct? To my knowledge.
Well, it is not an approved government vendor, but it is something that both the Trump administration and the Biden administration have been given to using in order to communicate among officials.
Right.
You're not supposed to be transferring classified information over Signal.
Right, right.
But so, we believe that it has been, if not common practice, we know that enough government officials have been sharing information, both in this administration and at least the immediately prior administration, that's very likely that that rule has been softened over time.
Right, and it may be a case where it's one of those sort of rules where it's only used when you screw up. It's only enforced when you screw up, almost retroactively, right?
In police work, it doesn't matter until it matters.
Right, yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, sort of like, if I could draw a parallel to our previous, it's sort of like when you find an obscure regulation or law that says the Secretary of State can revoke any one immigrant's a visa, right?
Like, and now you say, now is the time to trot that reg out because we need it.
Right, exactly. So it may be similar to this case, right, where it's like nobody's ever paid attention to it. It's archaic, and everybody's used Signal, as you pointed out, the Biden administration, the Trump administration, until someone screws up. And now it's like, what were you doing with that on your phone, right? So
right.
So just to put it in context. Okay, great. So now we've got the Signal chat that this reporter was invited to. Again, I want to stress this. He didn't break in or anything. He was invited
along
to this chat.
Along with at least anywhere from 8 to 14 are the numbers that have been thrown around. Government officials, high level, cabinet level, right, or immediately sub-cabinet level, and according to at least one of them, a few staffers.
Right, right. And right now, just to throw some of the names out there, we're in there, Mike, just for the sake of completeness, you had SecDef Pete Hegseth, you had National Security Advisor Michael Walz, You had CIA Director John Ratcliffe, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard. There's a lot of big names here, right? And in the middle of this, you've got a reporter for The Atlantic who is, obviously part of the liberal side of things, invited to this. So they have this meeting, and they're exchanging. Now, here's where, again, you get the different political spins. They may or may not have been sharing classified information on this chat. And there's two levels to this. Was it classified information? And then subtext, was it classified information at the time the chat was occurring? Because you could argue it's no longer classified. The strikes have occurred, blah, 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 blah. But was it classified at the time of the chat? So talk to me a little bit about that, about what you know about that.
Yeah, there's. I think there. You're right. There are two or three layers going on with this. One is the timing issue. It is classified until it's not, and it was not unclassified, and no one is claiming that anyone took any steps to unclassify it. I believe the reason no one is claiming that it was unclassified is because that was implied that it had been at some point, and the administration wants to, at the moment, remain adherent to this theory that none of it was classified. So I don't think the timing issue, while potentially very, very important, is not going to change the classification argument. I think it is an argument that's very, very important regarding the practicality of having released this information. They're going to say, well, the information with any detail regarding, the aircraft that were used, the timing of the bombing, the girlfriend's apartment building that was blown up after the terrorist organizer entered the building. This type of information was only accidentally released so close to when it happened, or in some cases even immediately after it happened, that operationally speaking, it wasn't that big a deal. So I think that that argument is going to continue to be made, that the timing here matters a great deal. I would like, however, to introduce another layer to this, which is to say it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter for two reasons. Number one, classification is not merely something that happens because someone decides this information is classified. That's not the only way things are to be classified. Things are classified by virtue of being derivative of other things that are classified. So if this information came from, as of course it did, from a pool of information that was absolutely classified, right? You couldn't possibly have known the aircraft or the timing unless it came from a pool of information, right? That was extremely classified at the highest level on a need-to-know basis among people with higher clearances than top secret. It is therefore presumed that it is not to be treated as in any fashion other than classified until someone explicitly decides otherwise. Number one. Number two, if I may.
Sure.
These are not low-level staffers. Right? By way of contrast, right? You brought up your past experience, which I found fascinating and extremely relevant. Well, when I worked for the White House several centuries ago, and if you work in the budget office, we all had a top secret clearance. And as my boss explained, that don't mean bullshit, right?
Right.
Don't be thinking you're going to wander into the wrong office and expect to be told things. That is not going to happen. Do not take it upon yourself to presume that you need or should have access to any particular material.
Right.
That it's still on a need-to-know basis. And by the way, top secret is not top, nowhere near top, right? That just meant you know, you're going to be privy to some conversations from time to time, and we expect you to understand to shut the hell up. That's all that really meant. It did not mean that you have access to anything that you want, and you get to decide how to treat this. Okay, that's a low-level staffer, right? You know, some 31-year-old economist working in the budget office. That's not who these people are. These are people who are policymakers, not rule followers. And so it's not really important in some sense whether something was classified. You should know what is important and what is not important. And the benchmark should be, if you're in that chat and you are having a conversation and you find out that one of the other 12 knuckleheads just released this to the Atlantic, are you pissed or are you okay? Okay, that's the litmus test. And if you don't say you're pissed, there's something wrong, right? Right. You should be pissed. You should be able to say you're pissed. And that means you know better than to have this released. You shouldn't need someone to tell you it's either classified or not. If someone gave you a memo that said, you know what, this information, we're releasing it relatively chronologically close to the operation. We're not going to include details about where. We're not going to provide information a long time in advance about when. We don't think, you know, which airplane is being used is critical or is going to compromise. None of this stuff is classified. Okay, you read that memo. Are you not smart enough to decide for yourself? You're a policymaker. You should know darn well whether that is material that should be released or not. It doesn't matter whether it's classified, which brings us to what I think is a much more important breach than, you know, it's going to be this aircraft at this period of time. And that is the conversation that led up to the operational conversation, the one about is this a good idea or is this not a good idea, in which some of the officials expressed some reservation. Good for them, by the way, yeah. Right? Good for them for expressing some reservation. Good for them to have some conversation back and forth. That actually made me feel better about this group.
Right.
You know, to know at least they're having a conversation in which they didn't just all assume this was obvious one way or another. Okay, right. Good on them. Right. If you're asking me to participate in this conversation, right, and then I find out ex post, I've just shot my mouth off thinking I was speaking to seven important people with discretion, and I find out you included the Atlantic? Don't come back to me and say, well, it wasn't classified. I'm sorry, that is not okay.
Right.
If you ever expect me to be forthcoming with you in the future, we're going to have a conversation that is not going to be pleasant.
Well, yeah, and you know, Mike, it's one of those things. Again, I'm not even going to pretend like I was in the service or work for government. It's been one of my life goals never to work for government. But just thinking of these types of things within the corporate world that I've been a part of, right? Like, there's two things. Actually, there's three things, and I'll just throw this out there. One is, I saw where Justin Amash today actually posted something that said, along the lines of what you said, as a member of Congress, seeing this dump, I could tell you all this stuff was classified at the time it occurred. He goes, if anybody tries to tell you otherwise, they're engaging in spin right now. They're it's in silliness. Damage control. It's silliness, right? So let's get that out of the way. The second thing is, when we were on corporate discussions and we were worried about corporate espionage or people listening in when they should have, like when we were building out that banking system, there were two people assigned to not participate in the meeting, but make sure that only people who were supposed to be in the meeting were actually in the meeting. That nobody. So my first question is.
And that's just to make sure you didn't lose your competitive advantage. That's just to make sure that, you know, Bank right. of America or Wells Fargo doesn't find out what you're doing and try to beat you to it.
Right, right. So first question is Waltz the guy who's sitting there on his phone? Oh, shit. Who do I have to invite again? Oh, let me just click all these. But is it Waltz himself? Or I'd like to think there might be two secure cleared admins who are putting this together for people, and then they leave the room, right? So that's another thing. And then the third thing is, and I know you sort of probably want to talk about this, is the reaction politically coming out of this. I've seen some weird takes, Mike, and one of the weirdest is where I see the new mainstream media, which is all the right-wing MAGA social influencer guys, right? The DC Drainos, the Cat Turds, and all these guys, right? The Laura Loomers, who I saw this on, like, coming out at once, so you know it was talking points handed down from the Trump administration, where they said, you know what, we're proud of J.D. Vance, because he came in there and said he doesn't give a crap about Europe. And he doesn't care anything about Europe. And so, and this was a talking point in the aftermath of this, right? Like, we know that our VP hates Europe. That's one of the takeaways here. And then the other takeaways that are slowly coming out of this in unified fashion. Jeffrey Goldberg's a libtard who has slandered Republicans and President Trump in the past. He's overblown the importance of what was in that chat. And as I'm watching this response, I'm saying to myself, wait, are we missing the headline that he was invited to that chat to begin with? Are we just missing that part? Because it seems to be focusing now on whether he's exaggerating and using the term attack plans. Like, that seems to be where the focus is from the right. Whereas from the left, it's this means that all of them should resign. That means that Hegseth should resign. It means that Gabbard should resign. Right. It means that, right. You know, so, and look, both are extremes. But if I'm being honest, I find the left's response a little bit more politically palatable because they're the minority party. They're going to jump on every opportunity.
And it's more predictable.
And it's more predictable.
I agree with you. I think both sides are exaggerating what should right. be their positions. The Democrats right. are a little bit more predictable. You know, the sky is falling. And, you know, we almost lost World War III.
Right.
And all of these guys need to be prosecuted.
Right.
I get the exaggeration, right?
Right, right.
And you're right. Okay. Let's acknowledge that is largely exaggerated.
Sure.
I mean, not completely wrong. This was obviously a screw-up.
Right, right.
And so I'm not suggesting everything that Democrats are saying is stupid. But, you know, there are a few of them that are exaggerating. Okay, let's put that aside. I do believe, and thank you for inviting me to comment on the politics of this, that once again, the White House is missing their correct, strategically correct communications strategy.
Right.
They need to get out ahead of this, not behind this. I believe that someone very senior who would be accepted as at least a peer of these people, right? Preferably their boss, which limits it to one human. I don't know whether Rubio was in this or not, but either Rubio or preferably the president needs to say some of the stuff that you and I have just said, which is, you know what? I don't care whether it was classified. I don't care whether it was 8 minutes before the bombs fell. I don't care about any of that. Would you people stop arguing about silliness, right?
Right.
You guys screwed up, and there's one person who should be pissed, and that's me. Because someone has got a dingleberry working for him, and he has two thumbs. And I'm reminded of what we all know, which is that everyone who works for the administration has taken a Trump loyalty pledge. This is not a Trump loyalty pledge. This is a Trump loyalty pledge. No one works for the administration without saying, yes, I'm loyalty to President Trump. That's a fact. That's not right. speculation.
Right.
Okay. What the hell does that mean? If you're loyal to the president and you just screwed up in a way that embarrasses the boss, embarrasses the administration, embarrasses the White House, embarrasses the project. By the way, no one is talking about the fact that the operation went well, right? You just screwed up our headline. You just screwed up our messaging. you have emboldened those who would stand up for the Houthis, because now they're thinking, well, the United States isn't going to try that anytime too quick on the heels of this screw up, right? So as a military matter, this has, you know, put us back a half a step. You know, I don't want to exaggerate that, but it hasn't helped, right? To your point about the J.D. Vance comment, I can imagine there would be a lot of people in the administration who agree with Vance. I admit there are plenty of times when I have felt the same way, that we are carrying too much of the Europeans' water. And I understand when Vance says, oh, I hate bailing out the Europeans again, what he means is we're taking on a military lift on behalf of those who should be participating in this and taking right. the political heat and the expense and the risk also. And I don't like that. I get that. That was a reasonable comment to make. All of which is undermined because you just leaked it to the Atlantic.
Right.
And now, you know, we can't make that argument in public the way we want to, or else we look like we're trying to spin a screw up as opposed to, no, that's a legitimate point. In other words, on any number of levels, this leak has embarrassed the boss and undermined our program of communications, of politics, of military strike, our relationship with Iran and the Houthis. This, you know, I don't want to overstate the importance. This is a little screw up with signal, yada, 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 yada. But this has not helped us. The president is the one who should be pissed, not Democrats.
Well, I think there's room for both of them to be pissed, Mike,
well,
right?
There's room for both of them to be pissed.
Right.
And if you really are loyal to the president, right, as everyone has pledged, every one of you guys has pledged, someone, Michael, someone needs to walk into the Oval and say, you know what, for the good of the team, I got to submit my resignation. I screwed this up. I've already accepted responsibility. And he has. Good for him. He said that it was his screw up. Good for him. But he needs to submit his resignation. Trump needs to accept that because he needs to underscore the importance of this because he's loyal to the president. If you don't want to do it for any other reason, at least do it for that. Make the loyalty pledge that none of us like.
Right.
But make it mean something now. And I think that this is a missed opportunity and poorly played. Trump needs to get out ahead of this and say, all this small talk, you know, was it classified? Was it, you know, was it too late? No detail. Signal's okay. Signal's not okay. Forget it. You guys screwed up. You made me look bad. Someone's going down for this.
Do you predict that'll happen, though? Because so far, the president has been, I think, uncharacteristically reserved. Like, I haven't come out, like, and I mean in either direction, right? He hasn't come out and said, screw the left, they're just out to get, like, he really hasn't come out on that side of things. But he also hasn't come out on the, like, we screwed up, to your point. He hasn't gotten out ahead of it either. So, to me, that's uncharacteristically reserved. Do you feel this is Trump, and again, I'm going to speculate here, Mike, so feel free to answer any way you want. Do you feel that, A, perhaps he doesn't appreciate the severity of what happened, or B, is he actually putting some thought behind what's the best thing to do? For example, is he – because, look, a lot of things go into this, but I think all of us can agree he's been more than willing to throw people under the bus when he feels sure. it's harmed his agenda. So the fact that Waltz hasn't necessarily been asked to fall on his own sword for Trump, do you think the president is actually considering what he expects of his people, or do you feel that perhaps he's not appreciating the severity of what happened?
I believe he does not appreciate the severity in the sense that he doesn't appreciate how so many Americans view it. I suspect that because he's surrounded by people who are dealing in the minutia, right, that he's being told the Biden administration used signal. No one did this on purpose. It's easy to happen. You know, we're not going to let this happen again. Nobody got hurt. No harm, no foul. You know, all of this adds up to, yeah, you know, we could weather this. We'll badmouth a few people and say that they're blowing it out of proportion and move on. I get that as a strategy. I don't mean that that's unreasonable. I just think it's dumb. You know, you can reason your way to believing that that's a decent strategy. I just think it underappreciates how the rest of us view this. Parenthetically, it also underappreciates the potential danger in letting this go, not only during your own administration, but in the future. It brings up certain questions. Is it true that releasing military secrets could matter? Maybe you believe that's not true. We know there are specific circumstances in which it could very much matter. And therefore, I believe that you need to take this seriously, not because of what happened, but because of what could happen. This is the old adage of the clock striking 13, something is amiss, something in the works, right? It's either people's attitudes or people's equipment, or people's education and understanding, but something needs to be fixed. And I think by sweeping this under the rug, you miss not only how important this is in public perception, but potentially how important it could be in the reality of keeping military secrets.
Excuse me, and I agree with you. And here's the other thing. There was a CIA operative's name in that chat that Goldberg, on his own, redacted. Now, theoretically, what if he Assanged the whole thing and dropped that guy's name? Now, potentially, you're looking at something that could have had real-world consequences, right? So, and I know I've heard things like, oh, that guy wasn't doing anything covert at the time. You know, he's not in date. You know, I heard a lot of stuff coming back from the CIA guy and that this name. But at the end of the day, and also the fact that that guy's name has not been revealed, or that I should say that person's name has not been revealed. It's still redacted, even in the dump, as far as I know. So obviously there is some value to that name not being made public. So aside from the military portion of this, there's that part of it as well that I think is getting swept under the rug a little bit. Like, and
there is
might,
that piece.
Yeah.
There is also the what I would call the Valerie Plume piece with, you know, for the youngsters, what was it, 20 years ago? She was revealed by a member of the press because he was told that she was a CIA operative. And he was told, I guess, depending on who you believe, he was told this on background and decided that it wasn't so backgroundish. He was going to make it public and obviously ruined her career, but also in some aspects, undermined her whole life because it undermined her livelihood as well as her credibility in any number of personal situations. She was married to someone else who was in the government and had lots of friends around Washington. I don't have any
right.
real sympathy. You know, if you undertake a career in the CIA, you get what they dish out. But this was not something that was supposed to be released, and a journalist just took it upon himself to do so. There have been allegations that put a whole host of other people at risk, not just Valerie Plume. So to your point, yes, these things can have important implications depending on who the journalist is to whom such things are revealed. And again, it speaks to the whole attitude of the operation. If you decide to sweep it under the rug, not only do you have operational effects, not only do you have communications problems with the American public, but what kind of signal does that send to your administration? You know, are you as pissed as you should be? And you know, I worry that maybe the president doesn't appreciate how serious this is at the moment, and maybe he will feel differently in 2 years and be retroactively pissed. I don't really know how that goes. you had mentioned earlier that, you know, he is willing to throw people under the bus when he perceives that it's necessary to do so to advance his agenda. I believe that that's true. However, I believe that it is disproportionately true when things are personal, when he perceives that someone is coming after him personally as opposed to some aspect of his agenda. And sometimes that cuts one way and sometimes that cuts another way. And so I think it'll be fascinating to see how this plays out over the next few days, how important he views this and what action he believes is necessary to be taken.
A lot of it may depend on poll numbers because we know he's nothing if not a populist. So I'm sure he's waiting for the poll numbers to see how the public is reacting to the whole situation. Okay, and because we're both libertarians, I'm gonna ask you to comment on the conspiracy theories just to wrap this up as a final point. From the right, you hear that this has been a leftist plot to discredit the president. From the left, you're saying, oh, this was a plant by the Trump administration in order to signal how much they hate Europe and the America First program. Comment to me on the almost instantaneous.
I've heard them both. They are both abjectly and objectively silly.
Yes.
There is no reason that any objective that could not be advanced by one of these alleged conspiracies could not have been advanced without such conspiracy. And there is no real evidence that would swamp Walz's admission already and Goldberg's statement. I think the shoe that has not yet dropped is the relationship between Walz and Goldberg. The fact that they were in each other's phones, the fact that Walz denies it and Goldberg says he doesn't want to talk about it, suggests that, yeah, there is something there that is yet to be revealed. And I think it will prove potentially embarrassing to one or both of them. I don't think there's any reason to believe that the only way the administration could get their message out is to leak it in some chat group and make themselves look dopey along the way. There's just not enough incentive. There's not enough juice there. Again,
how could the Democrats have actually orchestrated this either? Right. That's the other part of this, right? Like,
well, that does bring up an interesting point to suggest that there is a band of people in Washington, D.C. employed by the government or even government contractors smart enough to pull this off is asking too much for me to believe, having been in Washington for a long time. I just don't think that that's the case. That's the, you know, same type of people that went to jail over Watergate. Let's not get out ahead of our skis here. I think that the one guy who should be much more angry than he has revealed so far is President Trump, and that's what I'm looking for over the next few days.
Okay, Mike, final word as we sign off. Prediction, does Walz resign or not?
I think he doesn't, and I'm disappointed by that. I think that he should resign as a matter of signaling that we take this seriously as an administration, as a government, as a matter of being a grown-ass adult. And I think that that is necessary to make real and tangible the loyalty pledge to President Trump and saves the president from looking soft, in effect, by allowing him to stay.
All right. You heard it here, folks. This has been another great episode, in my opinion, of Liberty Lens. For my friend and co-host, Mr. Mike Tamat, this is Big John. Join us again next week when we'll have another episode focusing on just one issue of interest to libertarians. Until then.